हरि ओम सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
Okay. So we discussed that the jiva is by his own endeavors brings about his own misfortune. Right? So if that's clear, then it becomes very easy to work with it. Right? That's why the philosophy is there, is that then the mind will be convinced, and then from that platform of being convinced, then one can act. Right? Because the point is unless the mind accepts something, we generally don't act. Right? At least in theory, it must accept it. Then it will, you know, just out of mechanics work. So, yeah. So now, then he moves on, now bringing that in connection with the holy name. Then next heading, by the same misfortune, he chants offensively. Okay. In this way, he has become the choice candidate for committing aparads. If he takes up chanting, he is unable to avoid the 10 offenses. Due to his offenses, he cannot chant purely. He first gets the opportunity to chant when he soberly reviews the hopeless chaos of the never-ending conflict in his life. Such introspection forces the jiva to deeply consider his own good. The yearning for a peaceful solution to the endless torment of the unquenchable thirst for enjoyment draws him to the shelter of the holy name of the Lord. Thus, he begins to chant, initially indifferent to the proper understanding of sambandhagyan, knowledge of the relationship between God, his Shakti, and the jiva. Such chanting is known as namabhas, or the semblance of the pure name. Namabhas is not the holy name proper, but it results in the severance of the jiva's ties with the material mentality. He no longer sees everything materially. Gradually, he becomes eligible to render transcendental devotional service to the Supreme Lord. But only very elevated souls who have become completely immune to the onslaught of misfortune and offense can obtain pure love of Krishna by inoffensive chanting. So because of this, this misfortune where the jiva is identifying as the control, enjoyer and controller of the material world, therefore he engages himself in karma and jnana, then the results that come from that will give him all kinds of trouble. So that same mentality that gives him the trouble materially also restricts the results of his chanting. But here we see is that it says he's not chanting purely, but that doesn't mean that benefit is not there, that one is not advancing. See, when you're dealing with the holy name that is non-different from Krishna, and that by chanting it one is in touch with Krishna. And Rupa Goswami is saying that, you know, when he chants the holy name, he'd like to have millions, and Krishna dances on the tongue, he'd like to have millions of tongues. And then when it enters the ears, it's so nice, he wants to have millions of ears. Right? So this is what we're talking about is good chanting. You understand? So taking that as the standard, then we can understand something less than that is not actually what's desirable. Does that make sense? So the idea is that there's still benefit, that still one is still getting great benefit because you're dealing with Krishna. But the point is here, how you say it? It's namabhas, and that's not the holy name proper. Because the point is Krishna is going to, Krishna, the name is directly Krishna. But as on the principle of rasa, of ashray and vishay, then Krishna is going to reciprocate with you how you see him, how you approach him. So if here, then, how do you say, this indifferent, initially indifferent to the proper understanding of Sambandha Gyan. That we don't actually see him as the Lord and us as the servant and this, then how is Krishna supposed to respond to that? Right? The Dhanakasura, Aristasura, Agasura, they come into Vrindavan, right? What form of Krishna is in Vrindavan? Right? What form? Govinda, but of all the different forms of Krishna, how do we identify that form? Two-arm form, but he's also in Dwarka two-arm form. Braja Krishna. Okay, so he's standing there with the gopis or the cowherd boys when this demon comes in. So is that Braja Krishna or not? Yes? Okay, but when the demon comes, does Krishna deal with him as Braja Krishna? No, he deals with his Vasudeva Krishna. Right? Because he's coming in, he's not seeing Braja Krishna because of his mood. Right? So in the same way, is that thing of seeing directly that this is Braja Krishna, this name. You see like that, Krishna reciprocates like that. It's very simple. You don't see like that, he doesn't reciprocate like that. Because that's not how you want to see him anyway. So if you're indifferent, then he has to reciprocate, basically, in indifference. So, therefore, that indifference, because you're dealing, you're touching transcendental, it will get you out of the material world. Right? Because the material world is illusory. So one is understanding that that's not good, but one hasn't come to the point of accepting that the spiritual, realm is actually the real thing. Does that make sense? Because we're still thinking there's some value in the material world. Does that make sense? The mom brings out something nice to eat with the kids, but they're out playing in the mud and eating the mud. They're not going to take notice of it. Right? So this is the difficulty. It's because of the same thing of being attached to material energy, that's the same thing that keeps us from moving forward. That's why we put the emphasis on giving up karma and jnana and all that. Not that that is something significant. You know what I'm saying? Giving up karma and jnana is not a significant thing because it's an illusion anyway. You know? The point is to wake up to, Krishna and his devotees in Vrindavan and the non-difference of Krishna with his name. Right? But what's getting in the way is we don't understand that's of significance. We think the material energy is significant. And our position in the material energy is significant. That make sense? So that's why then the two are coupled together. But actually they're separate things. It's two points. Right? You get material problem because of material consciousness. That same material consciousness gives us trouble when we chant the holy name. Therefore, we're trying to give up material consciousness. Right? But the real thing is to develop consciousness of Krishna. Does that make sense? But if we just talk only about that, then people get very enthusiastic and hear the stories and roll on the ground in ecstasy. But they won't give up their material consciousness, so they actually still won't develop love for Krishna. And that's even more annoying, is to pretend that you have great taste for the holy name when you don't. Does that make sense? So then the two go together. This is the always remember Krishna, never forget. Right? So the always remember, that's what takes you back to Godhead. That's what gives you prema. The never forget is what gets you out of liberates you from the material world. Mahaprabhu's mercy. Lord Chaitanya, knowing the ill fate of the conditioned souls of this age, descended to spread the message of the chanting of the holy name. He saw in the jivas their apathy to the holy name and gave voice to it in this verse. Yet even in such depths of human misfortune, the Lord's causeless mercy is available. Right? So this misfortune is very great, but still the Lord is so merciful. That's why he's considered the most merciful. Right? Because we see in the Vedic literature that there are people who are getting great mercy of the Lord. But those people are very conscious and they've gone forward to get it. right? Like that. But we ourselves are not necessarily coming forward. You know, we're just happy to walk down the same street we've always walked down and do the same nonsense. And then somehow, by good fortune, the devotees come walking down that street and somehow or another change all that. Right? But here you have people going through great trouble to go out and find the Lord, like Dhruva Maharaj. He goes to great trouble to find the Lord. Right? So then, you know, they're getting the mercy. So here, Lord Chaitanya is so kind that even though we don't have that determination, still the benefit of developing that love for Godhead is still open to us. Yes?
What is the determining factor for the student to actually be able to capture the instruction and apply it to his life and practice it? Because sometimes we see that student might not be that sincere. Sometimes we see also that, well, if I am the teacher, I am not that qualified or I'm not that pure, so somehow I cannot penetrate. And sometimes even if the teaching is good, but if the time factor is not right, so what are the different factors which make it up? Because sometimes you give a person the valid instruction, but he just can't follow it because it's not his his time.
Yeah, no, good point. Basically, it comes down, as we were discussing before in the Dasamul, that it's simply desire. So actually this whole process is trying to cultivate the jiva's desire to actually develop love for Krishna. You know, to disengage himself from material entanglement and switch that whole, all his, you know, needs and desires to Krishna. That's basically all it takes. That's what we see as great personalities that, you know, surrendered in a moment, as is mentioned, that it can be done. That's what they did. You know, the gopis, the wives of the yagyic Brahmins, or what was his name, from the heavenly planets. I mean, he was from here, he went to the heavenly planets, and they told Maharaj Katbanga. You know, these persons that in a moment with surrenders, because they just decide that Krishna is the only thing of interest and value. So that's actually what we're trying to do. So this whole technical analysis of the philosophy and everything, and as it mentions here, is that this technical, where it says, when he first gets the opportunity to chant, when he soberly reviews the hopeless chaos of the never-ending conflict in his life. So we would take up the chanting when we see is, yeah, I'm going nowhere. You know, I may have material facility things, I'm getting material needs fulfilled, but actually it doesn't have any substance. So that moment we take up the chanting. But the idea is that that itself is also a continuing element. So it's when we stop doing that, then it also can slow down the development of our chanting. Because then we start to think is that my life has great value, because much of it we've connected to Krishna. But and so that's not a problem, except for maybe pride that might come from, I've become quite, steady or quite expert or developed in my devotional practices. So that can get in the way, that false ego. But many things is that other elements of our life we don't necessarily bring into that context. It's just by habit automatically, because we're a devotee, we consider everything's already connected, which it may be, but it may not be. So unless this contemplation is here, like that, then there'll be a difficulty. Note this here, he's saying, contemplating, yearning for a peaceful solution to the endless torment of the unquenchable thirst for enjoyment, draws him nearer to the shelter of the holy name of the Lord. So we're trying to enjoy on some level, gross or subtle. Right? So basically all the philosophy is supposed to make us, you know, how you say, fixed in this chanting, like that. Because it's indifferent to the proper understanding of some mangyan. So that's why there's so much technical analysis of the Sambandha Gyan, to see that we actually take it seriously. So that's why it's all there. Because in a very simple way, it can be done like that. Like we see is the language that Prabhupada uses, that it has a very simultaneously both a very simple, straightforward meaning. At the same time, it also carries very deep import of very technical, subtle points of Krishna consciousness. But the wordings that will be used will be that of the definition of something with a simple presentation. Though what's being explained is very, very deep, very grave. So if one needs that greater sophistication of understanding to convince oneself, it's there. And if one doesn't, then in a very simple way, it's there. So it speaks to both. So basically, it's coming down to is that the living entity himself has to want it. You know what I'm saying? Simply that observation that how do we become sincere, or how that itself is the method to get to it. You know, it's like unless you want to, you're not going to get to Calcutta unless you want to know how. So someone who's asking, how do I get to Calcutta? They have the best chance of getting there, not the person who doesn't even think about it. So it's actually that thought and that desire of wanting. So if that is actually sincere, Krishna will arrange it. You still have to work. This idea that, you know, I'm just going to be sitting there and this thunderbolt will hit me and I'll become enlightened, or, you know, something will happen and I'll fall down in a trance, and when I wake up I'll be a pure devotee. That's nice. That thunderbolt basically is understanding. Then you have to act on that understanding. So that's the difficulties. We think when I have some knowledge, either in the form of I can think about it or I have it on a piece of paper, like that. I've seen many times is that there are students that if they just get the literature, they already feel that I know it all, even if they haven't studied it. And they're just satisfied to know that I have the literature, that if I wanted to know, I could know, because it's there. But they don't necessarily make the endeavor to know. So that's where the Abhideya process is. So that's why then the technical analysis of Abhideya, so that you know if you're actually doing it or not. Because many times devotees are situated more in the Sambandha, but they think they're doing Abhideya. Or they're dealing with Prayojana, they think in their mind, but they're actually dealing with Sambandha. You know, it's like some will sit down and discuss so many things about, you know, Krishna and the gopis and the Brajavasis. And in their mind, it's dealing with Prayojana. But actually, they're just dealing with Sambandha Gyan, at a very defined high level of it. So it's nice, it's good. But they are not on the same platform of people who, by hearing those things, it invokes that love for Krishna. We just hear it and, oh, that's nice, it's attractive, it creates excitement. But attraction, excitement is Sambandha, right? It's Prajumna. Where there's a need, you have to hear these things. You cannot function without always remembering and talking about Krishna. That's Prayojan. So it's different. Oh, that's nice, how did you hear? That was so nice. And like that, that's Sambandha. So that means is you're deepening your Sambandha with Krishna, so that's good. But much of the time it's projected that it's Prayojana. You know what I'm saying? So that's why then these three are very clearly, you know, like, like hair-splitting definitions of the three, so that we're very, very clear what is our philosophy and how to apply it. But ultimately, the real thing comes down to just wanting it. That's all that's required. You want to chant the pure name, then you'll get the pure name. But the point is, you can't just want it thou this moment and then stop. You have to continually want it. And the more you continually want that, then that will come. Because then automatically, those things are there. You will use your intelligence and see, oh, I want the holy name, but, you know, Krishna will allow these things to be revealed. Then your Sambandha Gyan will become more clear. And then you'll be able to work, yes.
So as long as we're still on the platform of our desires, that we just want to minimize pain and maximize pleasure, even in a mode of goodness or even in a spiritual context, we cannot really enter into the secret of the holy name.
Yes.
Because we'll kind of use the holy name as a washing detergent.
Yes, but at least you've gone to the right place. You know, it means, it's like if you give it to the guy the guest house guy and he gives it to the dobi, or you go to the dobi directly. So it's like in the Bhagavatam it says, whether you have material desire, you have no material desire, or you actually have spiritual desire, in any case, if you go to Krishna, you've actually gone to the right place. The difference is you've gone to Krishna, but instead of asking him for $1,000,000, you've asked him for 10 paisa. You know, if you want material desire, because that's easy to fulfill, like that, because you're dealing with an illusion anyway. So to create an illusion of your happiness, that's the easy thing to do. To actually reveal and allow entrance into the real environment of love for Krishna, that's a different thing, because that means a commitment to a relationship. Right, so that's always a difficult commitment's always a difficulty, right? You know, so the thing is inherently that the jiva has this problem of committing to this, but if he can consistently maintain that desire, because that's what you're trying to do, then he will get it. But the difficulty comes is because of these material desires, it's hard to get those. How are you saying? It's hard to maintain that commitment. So it's kind of like the catch-22, is that all you have to do is want it, but you can't want it because you want other things. But that's why sadhu sangha and the hearing of Bhagavatam is so important, because then we see and hear about others that are doing that. And that moment, even that moment where you want that for that moment, that puts you forward. The other will purify you. But it's still, even you're very pure, it doesn't mean that will be invoked. So that's why you see you like the smartest, many of them are very qualified, very brahminical. They when it comes to brahminical culture, they are fixed in it so nicely. And so they're very, very pure. But the difficulty comes is that they don't have any desire to please Krishna. So even though they're actually on the path to going to Krishna, they're actually quite close to Krishna. Because of, the mode of goodness and everything, that's closer to Krishna. The mode of ignorance is farther away. So they're very nicely situated. Or they might even be liberated, but they're facing away from Krishna. So simply the idea is to turn around and face Krishna. Like that, yes.
So for a mundane logician, it's very confusing. Because on the spiritual platform, pain in separation is actually pleasure, and so-called pleasure is actually pain. So when they see Madhavendra Puri in separation, they think,
he's got a problem.
it is
a problem, and that same misunderstanding is actually what causes problems for us in our devotional service, because even on the mundane platform, pure mundane platform, basically the difference between the sensual pleasure, which is generally what we classify as pleasure, sensual and extended sensual, so anamoy, pranamoy, that will be generally what everyone will project as pleasure. But there is pleasures beyond that on the platform of manamoy and religiosity that much of the time are the opposite. It's just like it'll be looked at. Okay, the couple has just had a child, and so as soon as they have the child, you can kind of like kiss goodbye to sleep for 2 years, and doing whatever you like and everything like that. So much of the time, you see that they're, at least in the Western paradigm, they're constantly bickering about the loss of their independence, no sleep, they can't eat regularly, they can't do anything, right? And, as it grows up, then certain things get better, certain things get worse, and then it becomes a teenager, and then, another thing. And then they're complaining, and when they go, it'll be so nice, and this and that, and we'll have our time. And then the day all the kids are gone, and that pin drop silence is in the house, and that complete independence then the mother kind of figures out that it was better when it was worse. You know? So, because that is the taste of the actual relationship, because the rasas are situated in, it means on the mundane, in manamoy. There are no rasas below that. You know, as far as the parental, you know, conjugal friendship and that. You have sense-sense-object, the partiva rasa, you know, which is just, you know, mundane energy with gross mundane energy with gross mundane energy. But the manamoy, that is the subtle, that's of the mind. So one sees is that actually relationship means is going to be that voluntary giving up of one's independence and bringing one's life in line with the pleasure of another person. So on one level, that's pain. But on another level, that's actually the pleasure. That's what gives value and meaning to your life. Because you're willing to do that, that's why the other person appreciates so much. You're not willing to do it, then the appreciation is less. So you see relationships where they give themselves much more independence and those kind of things, it's actually much less the relationship. And the more there's less independence, the deeper is the relationship. So this, even in just, it's the same principle when you're coming to spiritual rasa. Because spiritual rasa automatically is based on the five primary rasas, not the secondary. The material world generally is based on the 12 secondary rasas. Like friends get together, it's not necessarily about the friendship they have, it's that they can get together and, you know, appreciate, you know, hasya, you know, laughter or chivalry or other different things like that. So that's what they are appreciating as so-called friends. But the real principle of being a friend that they're there for you no matter what, that's very rare. So basically, as it mentions in the third verse of the Bhagavatam, is most people don't actually taste the five primary rasas. Even though they may be in them, they don't taste them. They taste the second, and you know the sensual rasa, like that, because the primary rasas can only be tasted if one is functioning from the platform of religiosity. And if that religiosity is then Sanatana Dharma, then you can taste transcendental rasa, like that. Because it's the reflection, so it's the same thing. It's just on the connected to Krishna or connected to the Veda, like that. So when you connect the Veda to Krishna, then you get both. Like that. If you don't have a need for the Veda, then you can directly connect to Krishna, but that basically means the Paramahamsa, so you don't even interact with what's here. But if you're interacting with what's here, then you need to use the Veda to actually be properly situated in rasa, because then those two work nicely together. But just because you're expert at rasa here by following the shastra doesn't mean that you know anything about spiritual rasa. Like that, because still here it's for yourself. It's still. But it works as a nice indication. Is that make sense? Yeah. So it's important. So that's more also why these things are discussed, because this impersonalism penetrates much deeper than we think. Many times just things, okay, those guys that say there is no God or Krishna's not like that, they're the problem. That's the grossest form of the problem. That is a problem. We want to get rid of that. Well, but at the same time, within our life, just that the idea of being able to surrender to rasa and that I'm going to take that trouble for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Because to do anything nice for nice means trouble. You have a festival to make a nice festival. That's trouble. You know. So on the platform of goodness, in one sense, you would want to avoid that. But at the same time, is the mode of goodness, you follow all the rules nicely and all that. So therefore, you just set up that much, which makes it work nicely. And it's pleasant and all that. But because you're dealing with the human environment, therefore, things will go wrong that shouldn't have happened. You know, and then that becomes the problem, because then that's where the pain will come. Because that's where then one tries to avoid dealing with that, because then it means you have to, means you either have to drop back to passion or move forward to pure goodness to deal with it. Like that, because in mode of goodness, then you may not have the drive to take care of it. Is that okay? Yeah. Yes.
Above the five primary rasas not existing beneath the level of Manamoy, what, for example, if you took a materialistic couple predominantly in Anamoy and Pranamoy, and they'll be practicing some elements, maybe accidentally, of Manamoy before.
That's accidentally, but yeah. They're not conscious of it. They don't get much benefit from it. There'll be a moment here and there, that, you know, the sun comes running up, and that moment of just that feeling of just they need you and they're coming to you and they got their arms out and they're saying mommy or daddy, that moment that is there, that is that they're tasting that rasa, but the rest of the day they're not. You know what I'm saying? They're just dealing with the senses and this and that, and they're what they need and all. They want to feed the kid, but then they got to meet their friends, and then this and that, and all this turmoil that's going on. How do you think they can make, they can float so many soap operas? Right? If people were actually following religion, where would be the soap opera? You know what I'm saying? You could make one, but it wouldn't fly. You know, outside of India, you know, you probably have to, you know, run it with Sanskrit dialogue for those who would really appreciate it. Does that make sense? So the point is by accident, that's the only thing that keeps the living entity going in this material world. If they're not following the Vedic principles, by accident, they come across these things. So Maya is expert enough to give that drop. Because it's only one drop, it'll keep you going for a long time. You know, not necessarily in great inspiration, but in hoping to get that again. But because you don't know the science of how that came, you don't know, therefore, how to get it again. So it was by accident. You know, so basically the non-Vedic karmis and jnanis, then they get a drop here and there enough that they don't go crazy or give up on material life. Because if they give up on material life, what's the alternative? You know what I'm saying? Because they can't go to the spiritual world, so there's only spiritual world and the material world. So they have to be happy here, or at least inspired here. So therefore, Maya, you know, when you're completely just about to drown, she pulls you out. That's the reason Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives the example of the Habudubu. You know, you have a big pole, you know, and you put a chair on it and tie somebody to it and you put it under the water. And then just about when they're about to drown, you bring them out of the water and they get that one breath of fresh air, right? And that means everything to them. And just when they've got them, then bang, you put them back into the water. So she's expert like that, is she won't let you drown. But even if you're drowning, you have to be completely inspired by that drowning. You know, therefore you can become an impersonalist or, you know, worse than a Buddhist. Right? Because you're driven that this is inspiring you is to be a Buddhist and to extinguish your existence because you're still inspired to be here. Right? But someone with no inspiration and all that, that's going to be a problem. Right? But at the same time as that moments of lack of inspiration, then when something comes along, then you're very inspired. So, you know, she knows how to, you know, roast you on both sides, you know, like that. You know, she just, when it gets too hot, she just flips you over, you know, like that. So, and then you think, ah, that's nice, you know. Is that okay? So basically it's by accident. Some people are more knowledgeable by experience and generally by what's handed down, which we would call tradition. You know, so I don't even know if they use the terms now, but they used to use them before. You have old school and new school, right? So old school generally means is that there's something that goes back in history, that your parents and their parents and their parents, and the traditions that would be there and the understandings that would be there, the values that would be there, that would be called old school. New school is just, you know, what I think, what I'm into now, that's what I do, you know, and I'm very active and dynamic in that way. So that's very nice. So unfortunately, you have one or the other. The Vedic is you use both together. Is that you? The tradition is there because then the whole body of knowledge, within that, one is supposed to be inspired and dealing with the moment. Like that. So that combination will work. But it's based on, you have the Shastra, you have the Shruti. That gives all the knowledge. Great personalities, you know, very qualified personalities, having contemplated that, they discuss the Shruti. Those discussions, that's called Smriti. Right? So that technically is what we call tradition. Right? How great personalities actually understood and practiced the Veda. Right? Then you have example, you know, more contemporary, you know, our acharyas and other great personalities like that, or even contemporary today personalities, how they're following that smriti based on the Shruti. Then we take those three and apply it in our life. Right? That's the time, place, and circumstance. So when you have all those four in place, then you actually have Vedic understanding and practice. But if those four aren't in place, then you're dealing with modern. Because modern means I don't follow that process. And Vedic means I do. Like that. Does that make sense? So the Vedic means you know, you can see what happens. Well, why is there? Why is there an example like now in Bhagavatam of Kardama Muni? How, as a brahmachari, he practiced, how he arranged the marriage, you know, how the whole thing was there, how he interacted with his wife, how he lived with his wife, right? How he had his children, how he raised his children. Does that make sense? If it wasn't important for us. So here is how, basically, one of the sons of Brahma, who is a great realized person, how he involved himself in grihastha life, how he moved through the ashrams. So brahmachari, grihastha, and then moving on to vanaprastha. Right? How did he do that? Right? So then a few examples are there of that, or other things, the determination, that focus, that it doesn't matter who you are, if you're focused, it works. Dhruva Maharaj, it doesn't matter that he's 5 years old. He had that focus, that commitment, that determination, it works. Right? Does that make sense? So you see that. The demigods, they're out there fighting, but they don't have that commitment and focus. Therefore, the demons are winning. So then they have to run off to, you know, Lord Brahma, go off to Lord Vishnu. Then he inspires them. Then they come back, and then they can fight with determination. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole idea, is that one's trying to develop that understanding, that focus, that sambandhigyan means then you're going to have focus. Right? This relates to his question before, is that the sambandhigyan is to create focus. That you know who you are, who Krishna is, what's the material energy, what's your relationship. Being very clear on that, then you know what is the goal that you can get from that relationship and what is the method to attain that goal. Being very clear on that, then one will be very focused on one's chanting, one's serving, one's association with Vaishnavas. Is that okay? Then the whole thing, then it's not guesswork. It may be a lot of practice. You know, just because you know doesn't mean you don't practice. Right? That's the idea. The Westerners, if you know, they'll say that was realization. It means what they call realization, we call knowledge. Right? Like an epiphany is knowledge. Right? Value or is what is how you live your life. Right? So in other words, they get, you know, a peripheral understanding of something, just a mechanical understanding, so that they can actually operate it. But when they get an understanding higher than that, by the science of it, then they'll call that realization. When technically, no, that is jnana. Like that. Before, that was technique. That was the art. You learned the art. But what you got knowledge or understanding, and that's the science. You may also get more understanding and applying the art, but that means you're starting to deal with the science, because you're starting to connect things together and seeing there's patterns and that it works in a particular way. So realization means this is something I need to do, you know, as a permanent thing. You know, I need to chant Hare Krishna. I should chant Hare Krishna. That's the only way for it to work. That's understanding. I need to chant, and so I'm going to chant no matter what. That's value. Then you're dealing with prayojana. So that's what makes the difference, is that one is as Krishna mentions, is that by contemplating the objects of the senses, right, then one develops an attachment. Right? So that's the whole point. You're dealing in sambandha there, in prajumna. Right? Is that I'm contemplating the sense objects. That looks interesting. Oh, that looks interesting. So that's interest, that's desire, that's excitement. But when that deepens by further contemplation, then it turns into need, attachment. So the whole idea is by hearing, then we develop the interest. By regularly having that interest, it will turn into need. Right? So that's why that regular cultivation is important. That's why it's saying Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Always contemplating that, always associating with the Bhagavats. Then that comes about. Right? Is that so that it comes about, and then it works. But without it, so that's the whole thing, is that everything that you want is gained through this process. Because the same problems that keep you from chanting, by removing those same problems, that success spiritually is also your success materially. Right? Our lack of material success, or material distress, is also the cause of our spiritual distress. Right? But if the focus is on the spiritual development, then in the same, applying that same formula, right, which is non-different, then the material success comes also. Does that make sense? Because the point is if you have a reflection, there's a point at which it meets. Right? And that point of where it meets can go either way. You can go from there into the tree or into the reflection in the water. So that's the point, is that's why it has a dual meaning. It's material or it's spiritual. So the point is that from that point, if you focus on the spiritual, it will go to the spiritual. You don't focus on the spiritual, it'll go to the material. But at least it's pious. It looks like the tree. You know what I'm saying? But if you start getting into, you know, the impressionists and these kind of things like that, it doesn't really look like the tree anymore. You know, so therefore the results you get from the material experience also are less than what can be gained in the Vedic, because you're not actually dealing with it with the complete reflection. Even though it's an illusion, but it's at least the complete illusion. You know, it's like that, what is it? Prabhupada mentioned there was that sannyasi who he gave up sannyas and married some girl. And so then, you know, it happens. So when Prabhupada then saw, you know, the girl that he married, then he turned to one of the other sannyasis and then he said, he fell down for her? You know, it was kind of like, you know, okay, you know, it's like, you know, Vishwamitra fell down for Menaka. We understand it happens like that, but he fell down for her? It's like, you know, what's going on? You know, so does that make sense? So even in the illusion, it's not complete, and it's kind of like, why would one do that? You know, does that make sense?
Yes. So if you're not successful in implementing Varnashram, does that mean that automatically it proves that you're also not successful spiritually? Because the Varnashram, the application of that Krishna's social system, is the material reflection of our spirituality, of our progress in spiritual life.
You could say, but it's, but in that analogy, but what we're talking about here, because we're coming to that joint is the principles. Then you have the manifestation of the form. Because there's a point where the tree and the water and the actual tree meet. You know, or the sand and the water meet. You know, like that. So, or the day and the night meet. So that sandhi, that junction, you know, that's the tathasta principle. So it, the tathasta means it works either way. So what we're, the most important thing is the Vedic, how you say, the Vedic system or the varnashram or all these things, they're actually a set of principles that have their natural original form. You know, just like the motherly, how you say, affection is most naturally manifest in a form like Mother Jashoda. Like that. You know, very feminine, very motherly, you know, very committed to that. But you do have mothers, you know, that walk around in their mini skirts and, you know, they've gone through their, you know, how you say, their cosmetic surgery and all this and that. So you wouldn't actually, except for the pram that they're pushing, you would never guess that this lady has that relationship. Like that. But technically, she's a mother. So the form is not ideal. Or you can say, let's say you have an older sister. The older sister is 8 years old and she's taking care of, you know, the 5-year-old, you know, sibling. Like that. So then that mood that's used is actually parental. But the form of it isn't in the full-blown ideal manifestation. But the rasa is there. So you have your ideal in the spiritual. That naturally has its basically same forms reflected in the material as the ideal that you see, that we hear about in the Shastra. So, but those are all based on an inherent principle. It means Mother Jashoda first has the mood of parental rasa, then that form is manifest. And that's what the Brahma Samhita is saying. That, yeah, but, Yam kama krodha sahaja pranayari bhiti vatsalya moha guru gaurava sevya bhavai. So by the bhav of that, then that form manifests. So the same thing in the material world is actually the system is to start from the mood and manifest the form as best you can. But if you can't catch the mood, then another way of, like, let's say, kick-starting the process, the mood, is to accept the form. So that's why we'll also push following the form, even if the bhav is not there. We talk about the form and press that, though we talk about the bhav also. But some people who don't understand the mood will accept the form. But then the problem is that can run into the kind of smarta kind of aspect. Or, you know, what we call the fanatic or this and that, is that the form becomes the all in all, when actually the form is simply to invoke a particular mood. Like that. You know, it's just like the woman dresses in a certain way to invoke the feminine nature. If she already has the feminine nature, she will dress in that same, that particular recommended way. Like that. If she doesn't have it, by explaining it, then it may come. But if by explaining it they still don't catch it, then you just say, okay, what am I supposed to do? So dress like this, behave like this, walk like this. By doing that, then with time it starts to happen like that. But at some point one has to switch and make understand that the mood of it, the principle of it, is actually the prominent element, because that's what then becomes the difficulty in actually even discussing the devotional process, varnashram in connection with that, and varnashram in connection with material facility or success, is that much of the time varnashram is taken as the form, when the form is actually the ideal manifestation of the mood, like that. So if the mood is caught, then you can apply it anywhere. Does that make sense? Like that. So then, okay, yeah, that. Oh, we're over the time. Okay, so we'll end here, and then we'll continue the other class in a few minutes.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai.
if you come this way. West.
Devotee. And he's going to be a coconut.